This is the Kratom Science Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Gallagher, blog and social media writer for KratomScience.com, your source for all things Kratom. My guest this week is Amy Weick from Kansas. Several years ago, Amy worked at a meat processing plant. The physical strain of the job left her with permanent chronic pain. Her medication was later tapered off by her doctor. The pain didn't go away again until Amy discovered Kratom.
I started taking Kratom in 2017, but my chronic pain started back in roughly 2005. I worked for a beef factory here in town for about 7 years, and I started developing really bad lower back problems.
It's a beef factory?
Yeah.
Okay.
Processing beef, and I'm a very short person, very small stature, so wearing heavy equipment and throwing sides of beef wasn't really something I should have been doing, but
yeah,
I was working harder than I was supposed to be.
Amy's not alone. Injuries like hers are common in meat processing plants. Workers spend their entire shift performing fast-paced, repetitive motions. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration has issued ergonomics program management guidelines for the meatpacking industry. However, the nature of the work is bound to lead to injury. Many processing plants are in areas of high unemployment, so workers are easily replaced, which doesn't give the company an economic incentive to take care of current employees. And these types of jobs do not typically allow for adequate time off to rest. If you miss work, you don't get paid. So many have no choice but to work through the pain.
After probably a couple of years, I started telling the company I needed to go see a doctor, told them what was going on. Basically, down the line, it ended up I was seeing about a dozen doctors through the company. None of them had an idea what was going on. They did x-rays, they did MRIs, they did pretty much every kind of test you could think of, and nobody had an answer for me. So in 2006, that was when I ended up stopping working there because the pain got so bad, and they told me, there's nothing we can do for you, so we're going to give you a settlement, send you on your way, and hope for the best. It was basically their way of cleaning their hands of everything that was going on with me. It continued, and they got a lot worse. They still do today.
Mm-hmm. I guess that led you to take prescription pain medication. Is that right?
That's right.
Was it a problem where you couldn't get access to it? Like, recently, they've been, you know, they've over-prescribed it for a couple of years, and now the problem is people who actually need it can't get it.
Exactly. It was kind of touch and go from about 2013 to the time I was cut off. They would reassess everybody who was on them. So anytime you went into the doctor's office, you'd stay there for about an hour. You would have a consult with a company from, say, New York City or Kansas City or somewhere like that to reevaluate why you were on that medicine. And they would ask me, you know, what's the problem? Has it gotten worse? Are you taking more medication? Have you tried stopping the medication and trying something else? And it was pretty simple. Everything that the doctors threw at me, medicinally, therapeutically, or otherwise, I tried it. So it wasn't like, give me the pills, I need them right now or I'm going to die. It was,
yeah,
I went through physical therapy. I did walking. I walked 2 miles a day for a little over a year to make the pain stop. And then one day my doctor switched me and she said, here, I'm going to give you this, but I'm going to a different position. So you're going to go to a different doctor. And first day he says, well, I'm going to piss test you. And I told him it's going to come up. Only one of them's going to come up. And he's like, well, whatever happens, we'll deal with it. A week later, I was told I'd be always being tapered. So, yeah.
So were they going to try to, like, put you on Suboxone or something like that?
See, that was the thing. I'd never heard about that until this last year. They told me they were going to keep me on, I was taking methadone at the time. I don't remember what milligram. And hydrocodone. They had pulled me back from morphine extended release and Percocet, two pretty high ones, to those two. The only one of those that really did anything for me was the hydrocodone. Methadone didn't touch my pain.
So, I mean, okay, so when did you discover Kratom?
November 2017.
See, it's a lot, like a lot of people don't realize how mild that is compared to pain medication. I mean, do you use that in place of pain medication
Yeah.
or okay, and does it work as good as pain medication?
In my opinion, it works a lot better than that because
Oh,
for
okay.
me, the pain medication, I felt drugged up 90% of the time. Even when
Yeah.
I was taking it a little less than what I was prescribed, it was you take it and your body feels like you're under enormous weight.
Yeah.
And the first time I took Kratom, I took about, oh, 3 or 4 grams in a glass of tea. And an hour later, I was up walking around. I didn't feel
Yeah.
doped up. It was just straight up pain relief. And I was like, holy crap, this stuff works. So I was completely dumbfounded. I didn't expect it to work.
And so since then you've only been taking Kratom and you don't need anything else.
Yeah, I came completely off all my pain medication. I had been tapered by that time. I do dabble in a few other herbs, not marijuana, but there are several other herbs that I do take for mood, energy, and kind of a boost to help the kratom last a little bit longer.
And what are those?
Well, a couple of them, we've got ashwagandha, there's
Okay.
horse chestnut, there's corydalis, turmeric is a potentiator of kratom. There's a
Okay.
whole, laundry list of things. You can go online and just start looking things up. A lot of the
Yeah.
communities on Facebook and Twitter talk about them.
Are there strains of Kratom you prefer?
That's kind of a difficult one to answer because I've gotten, well, let's see, I've gone through several different vendors over the last 2 years. One vendor will have Red MD. You can get another vendor that have the same Red MD, but they're completely different color, different
Yeah.
effects. So I think it really depends on how it was processed, how it was dried, and the
Yeah.
time that was put into, getting it to that, state.
Yeah. I think that's right too. We kind of think that here 'cause it's like and I'm not sure if there's that much difference between the strains. It might just be kind of I don't know a thing to market it, but
Right.
like you said, it's like the time of year and the drying process and stuff like that. So that's good.
They can take a white strain and it, lots of energy and they can get stuff done. White puts me to sleep within a few minutes.
Have you had any side effects with Kratom?
Yeah, I've had
Okay.
mild constipation. I've
Yeah.
had dehydration because I did not take the drink water part seriously for the first month or so. I paid dearly for that. Migraines are no fun.
Yeah.
I've had to come off of it before. It's not, to me, it's not really that bad. I mean, I've had RLS for years, so kind of a, it doesn't really bother me as bad as it used to, but my doses aren't so high up that if I come off of it, my body goes into shock. That's not the way it is for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's just my pain returns, and I realize, okay, this is why I take it. My pain is really still there, and the kratom really does what it's supposed to do. So
Yeah.
I have to take breaks every couple months, but as far as withdrawal or anything like that goes, it's honestly not that severe compared to
Yeah.
coming off pain meds.
When you had to go off pain meds, did you go through some bad withdrawals there?
Yeah, it was horrible. let's see, the best way to describe that is imagine the worst hangover you've ever had, and imagine you going down the highway at 50 mile an hour, jumping out of a car and just tumbling down the road. That's how bad your body hurts when you're coming off any kind of opioids.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people say with Kratom, it's just kind of like coffee. If a lot of people can't have their coffee, and if they don't have their coffee, they get a splitting headache. So it's kind of the same thing, but you could come off it if you had to, no problem. So, are you involved with activism out in Kansas with keeping Kratom legal? I mean, I know I see you on Twitter, but is there anything in particular going on in Kansas with with kratom laws?
To my knowledge, knock on wood, it seems to be pretty quiet right now.
Good.
Sherry, I think you may pronounce her last name Locascio. I don't really know how to say her last name. She lives about 40 miles north of me. She is a really big activist. I mean, she goes out, she gets right in the meeting. In Ohio, I've seen her she's really awesome at it. I'm better doing the keyboard stuff and talking through it like that, but I'd like to be able to go to things like that and be active in it.
Yeah. Well, it's good that there's nothing going on so far in Kansas.
Yeah, I'm keeping my hope, you know, praying, and if anything does come up, I'm going to be right there to put my two cents worth in and talk to the people about it, get them the education they need for it, because there is so much false information out there right now about it.
Yeah.
People really do need to stop and read instead of just letting the FDA pull their strings. So.
Definitely, definitely. This next question I ask Amy is about a controversy that we covered in the first episode. We all know about the opioid epidemic. People like Andrew Kolodny point out the drug company's role in promoting opioids. He advocates against opioids and the use of pain management. But many chronic pain patients and advocates say the response to the opioid crisis has gone too far. Because of political pressure, doctors and pharmacists are refusing to provide opioid pain medication even to those who really need it. There are increasing suicides of chronic pain patients who do not receive proper care.
And I see I kind of had a question written down because there's a guy that you talk about on your Twitter feed, Andrew Kolodny. Is that his name? So, like, what is he doing to misinform and people like him doing to misinform the public in general? I think he talks about more about chronic pain and pain medication.
He does not believe that chronic pain exists. He doesn't think that people with chronic pain actually have chronic pain.
So that's, yeah, and that goes along, like, there's misconceptions about chronic pain. Like, some people think it's just all in your head or it's just addicts trying to get drugs.
How do I put this? Okay, Andrew Kolodny and Alemke, those two are both so close-minded when it comes to the thought of someone being in pain all the time. For them, you get a headache, you take a Tylenol, you go to bed, and you're fine. But with so many different kinds of chronic pain, autoimmune diseases, you get in a wreck, you break your leg, something happens, boom, you're stuck with pain for the rest of your life. They don't believe that that actually exists. And when you go on Twitter and you type stuff in and all he has to do is block you or have his media people block you so he doesn't have to listen to that. Both of those, Anna Lemke, Andrew Kolodny, they are not willing to listen to the fact that chronic pain exists and that there are millions of people who can successfully take opiates for years without becoming addicted to them, and it does help them function daily. They are not willing to believe that.
There's a misperception that if you take an opiate that you're going to end up in the gutter with a needle in your arm, and it's just not, I mean, most people that take any drug don't become addicted to it. Do you think addictions is more of like a mentality, and like what's the difference between a chronic pain patient who can take opiates and an addict?
The biggest difference is unless an addict has chronic pain or a condition that causes it, they won't be able to put that needle down because they're expecting that rush every single time. And when they don't get it, they're going to go to a higher dose or a worse drug that does produce that. When it comes to a chronic pain patient, they come off of whatever it is that's stopping their pain returns. Now, people need to realize that's not the pain from withdrawal from the drug. That is the pain that they deal with every single day, no matter what happens. And one thing I do want to add about myself is addiction runs through my family, and I'm not going to mention my family's names or anything, but my mom and dad were both, you know, they were addicted to alcohol, not drugs, but I was able to successfully come off opiates after 10 years. Didn't even think about it. I just thought, okay, I've got to figure out a way to get this pain to stop. I stopped the pain pills. I went straight to Kratom. I did not look back. I didn't go out to the street and try to find someone who could give me something stronger, because I knew that was not going to be a good thing for me. So I have it in my gene, in my genetic pool, to be addicted to pretty much anything. But I made a choice, and now it doesn't make me any better or worse than anybody else out there, but I made a choice that I was going to treat my chronic pain this way and be more productive about it. Addiction and dependence, two completely different things. Your body becomes dependent on the medication, but you don't necessarily want to be on it or want to have it, but you do want that, you want and need that pain relief. Addicts don't care. They just want to feel that rush. I've known a lot of those too, and it's hard to say that without making them think that I'm bashing them, because I'm really not.
See, they were over-prescribing for a while, because it seemed like they were just, a lot of the drug companies were pushing the pain medication to people who were addicts and didn't need it. But why do you think they want to under-prescribe now? Is it just the CDC that's, or the FDA that's, are they cracking down on doctors, is what I'm asking.
Right now, I think it's a suicide thing. I'm not trying to say that they're going to kill us all, but I'm saying they want to take pills away from certain people who need them to survive day to day, but they want to see who can handle it the best. If you take pills away from 100 people, how many of those people are going to go out and find something stronger? How many of those people are going to suffer through their pain and deal with it? And how many people are going to say, hell with it, I'm done, I'm going to blow my head off?
Mm-hmm.
They don't care about who's committing suicide or why. They just want to pull the pills out of the hands so they can show that they're flexing. I would love to meet anybody within the FDA or the CDC who has anyone in their family or loved one who happens to suffer from chronic pain.
I know, and it's just kind of horrifying. When you said flexing, I thought of the vape thing that they're doing recently with, like, flavored vapes. Well, I mean, and the guy in the same breath, I mean, I just wrote an article on Kratom Science about this, but the guy, Gottlieb, they're interviewing about this, he's not in there anymore, but he said, in the same breath, he said, okay, well, yeah, we banned these flavored cigarettes because teens, that's what they like, and then in the same breath, he said, well, now they're obtaining them illegally now, and I'm like, yeah, that's what you did, you just created that black market.
Yeah,
I think, you know, those flavor vapes didn't go away. They're not just the retailers aren't just going to throw them all of them. You're going to throw them in the dumpster.
Yeah, they'll find an external.
Yeah, I mean, that's the same thing with Kratom. I mean, it's all here, and it's going to be sold somewhere, whether it's out in the open or in the black market. I mean, and do you support Kratom regulation?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I think, I mean, you know, we don't want it, we want it to be pure and not adulterated, and now it's kind of a, if you need a new vendor because the one had their supply cut off by the FDA, then
right.
you have to do tons of research and make sure you trust the person who's telling you this is a good one and this isn't a good one.
Right. Well, that's the thing about it. Most head shops, gas stations, backwater, stuff like that. I've bought from both of those before, and I think I spent $40 on 30 capsules, and it said that it was green Meng Da. Well, I took those because I had no other way to get my Kratom, my other mail, shipping, and all that stuff, but I just didn't get as much out of it.
Yeah.
And one thing people also need to realize is, whatever your delivery method is, whether you take it by toss and wash, capsules, or blake disc, your measuring system is going to be different with each one of those. With capsules, you've got three different sizes. Oblate discs, you can pack them as tight as you can. You can get up to, I think, 6 or 7 grams in there. And with toss and wash, I've seen people freaking heaping tablespoon of that stuff. And to me, it's not that hard to get down, but you got to know exactly how to do it. When finding a vendor, do your research. Make sure that you know exactly when that company started, what their record is, what their lab results are. Know that you can trust them. Talk to people online who you know are real, not bots. find out what is their opinion of it. Because if you just go out and say, well, Joe Blow down the street ordered from this vendor, I'm going to try that. You have idea what's in that stuff.
Yeah.
And the more we allow unadulterated crap, or adulterated, sorry, the more we allow dirty stuff to get out there, the worse it's going to be for this community. We have got to keep this stuff pure and got to keep the people safe. I do firmly believe in that.
Mm-hmm.
Probably sound like a politician right now, but...
No, you're right.
People need to be careful.
You're right, because, I mean, it would be great. I mean, you know, it would be great if we had an FDA that's what their job was.
Yeah,
but...
I don't like his opinions on Kratom, and I don't like his opinions on vaping, because he's just there for the money.
Yeah.
They kicked him out of the FDA, so now he's going to go work for a private company.
No, he's on the board of Pfizer now, yeah.
Yeah.
The drug company. It was like, well, all that stuff we were saying must have been a big conspiracy theory. No, he goes right to Big Pharma. Oh, no.
Yeah, let's show the people that they're right.
Yeah. Like, that guy he has an MD, but he also, like, his other degree is in business and, like, venture capitalism. And, you know, so he had his career trajectory, and it was kind of obvious what he was doing.
And the bad thing is he knows exactly how many people's lives he's messing with.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how he sleeps at night.
He doesn't have a soul. It's not hard to sleep at night when you have no soul.
It's
a lot, man. I mean, if you're in it for the money, you don't care who dies and who lives.
Thanks for listening to the Kratom Science Podcast. Thanks to my guest Amy Wyke from Kansas. Please like and subscribe. The music is Risey. The song is Memories of Thailand. For more information on all things Kratom, see KratomScience.com.